Global Connections Television is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guests. We invite you to go to the website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous shows. If you're involved with a PBS or community access television station or an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup, or perhaps a podcast or just a computer and would like to share the programs, please feel free to do so. Global Connections is provided at no cost to help people in the U.S. and worldwide better understand how international issues impact our lives.
Welcome to today's Global Connections program. I'm Bill Miller. Today we're going to take a look at the possibility of robotics in warfare. My guest is an expert on this topic. Dr. Peter Layton is a visiting fellow at the Griffith Asia Institute at Griffith University in Brisbane, Australia. He is the author of the book Grand Strategy, and he's the co-author of Warfare in the Robotic Age. Dr. Peter Layton, welcome to today's Global Connections program.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you being with me today. Let's jump right in. It's a fascinating topic, one we've heard a little bit about. We're going to hear a lot more about it today. What is the main thrust of your book? What is the main idea that you're promoting?
When you start talking about warfare, there's a term often used, and that term is revolution in military affairs. And that sort of highlights that at times that there is a change in the technology that suddenly alters warfare. So in the book itself, our principal thrust is that the nature of warfare, that is, warfare is sort of all about politics, if you like, which comes from sort of Clausewitz, that we fight wars for and about differences in our politics. That's staying the same, but the character of warfare, that is how warfare is waged, will be changing, and will be changing because of robotics. Now, at the same time as making that claim that robotics are causing a revolution in our current military affairs, we have to bear in mind that technology doesn't solve everything and doesn't shape everything. So there are a number of other factors as well that will influence how the character of war changes under the thrust of robotics. And of course, it is really how robotics are applied, if you like, and how military forces take them up that will actually shape warfare.
And your book indicates that robots have particular characteristics. What are those characteristics, or some of them?
Yeah, just to sort of make things simple, I suppose, because the term robot can mean many things to many different people. We thought they were machines that were able to perform four basic tasks, that they could sense, they could think, they could act, and they could communicate. That is, they could sense the environment around them, they could process that sensory data so as to make a decision, they can implement this decision, and they can converse with other machines or humans. And crucially, and why we're talking about this now, of course, is modern robots can now undertake this sequence with little or no input from a human user. And of course, we're talking here about robots having, artificial intelligence, and they can think for themselves to a point, as we'll talk about through this particular talk. The interesting thing, of course, in the modern era is that we sort of tend to think of machines as having a certain amount of agency. They aren't just passive actors, if you like, that they are active and they have some agency in military affairs. And it's this assumption about agency that makes robots of great interest now and concern when humans are fighting wars.
Do you find that the militaries, be it in the United States, Russia, Australia, wherever, do you find that they're all looking at robots and the replacement perhaps of humans or a certain number of humans on the field and using robots instead?
There is no doubt that military forces around the world are suddenly taking up robots. And I think that's at least partially caused by the Ukraine war that has seen a sudden flurry about the use of robots. At the in our modern era, we sort of have a view that better technology is seen as battle winning. Now that hasn't always been so. We only have to think about the Vietnam War and the Afghanistan wars, etc., where the side with the best technology hasn't necessarily won. There's also amongst militaries, because all militaries sort of keep up with other defence forces around the world, there's a fear of missing out. So defence forces like to keep up with the latest trends. So once one or two start getting interested in, say, the robotics field, others do as well. And all this sort of adds up and makes it makes sure that innovation is the buzzword of the moment. The trouble about innovation and robots are often seen at that sort of leading edge of technology, bringing in sort of new ideas and new applications. The trouble is that militaries tend to be conservative organisations, and they're not designed for a change. They are designed for being stable and not adopting brand new ideas. So there's a tension there, if you like, between militaries that need to innovate and bring in new ideas and find new ways about fighting wars, and so win wars that way. And there's a tension between that and then the fact that militaries as organisations tend to resist change, and they want to stay, if you like, fixed in the past.
Now, it seems like there are certain incidents, well, there are certain circumstances where robots are being used right now. For example, bomb disposal. You so often they'll send a robot in to get a bomb. Hopefully it won't explode and blow the robot up, but at times it does. If there's a hostage situation, for example, they might try to use robots. But where are we using robots today in either the security area, in the police area, public safety, or in the military?
Okay, so as you say, there's tens of thousands of those bomb disposal robots around the world. Now, they're robots, except that they're remote control robots. So the operator is, if you like, looking through a camera in the robot and directing the robot. So they're robots that have only a very limited amount of thinking. They will have a system that is able to use it for, say, driving, but the human's driving it, if you like, from a remote spot. So what's happening now is over the last 5 or 7 years, the robots have started getting brains, if you like. As I said, they're getting artificial in intelligence. So there's a sudden rush now with experimentation about trying all these thinking robots out. So in the military sphere, and of course you can see robots sort of now at the present time in their very simplest form in things like smartphones that will talk to you, and large language models like ChatGPT that will seem to be thinking about issues. But at the present time in the military sphere, what is really dominating the rise of robots in a specific military sense is the US-China competition, and here the role of the robots sort of looms large. Western forces and most military forces tend to have developed very large, expensive, and a few platforms. For instance, the classic example is aircraft carriers. They're very effective as combat platforms, but they're very expensive, and there's very few of them. So the rise of the robots is the complete mirror image of that. Is that seen as having a very large number of small, low cost, and affordable robots, and that's the sort of change, if you like, from having a few to having many. And the belief is that that maybe swarms of robots, that is a swarm of say 100 robots or more, will be able to overcome one of those single, very large, very capable platforms. It is unsure whether that idea will in fact work in the real world. It's unsure which particular nation will be best at it. When you look at technology like sort of robots, in the military sphere at least anyway, the technological leader is certainly the United States, but China seems relatively close behind. Now that both sides have advantages, if you like, the American robots are certainly more technologically advanced, but they're harder to build. And China, as we know, is the manufacturing hub of the world. So China is very good at manufacturing. The United States is very good at research and development. So there's a bit of a gap there, if you like, between the two sides. We'll have to see how that plays out. If you like, China could make a very large number of moderately good robots, whereas the United States might be able to make a smaller number of very good robots.
Are there instances now where the robot you were talking about that had the four characteristics of observing, processing, internalizing, making decisions, that whatever the four characteristics were, but do we have them now? Are they actually in existence and they're being utilized?
Oh, so the large number of them being used as far in experimentation now, and they're being used for a whole pile of strange places, perhaps. And sort of looking just within Australia, just to sort of indicate that this is not just and America-China aspect as well. So in Australia, the Australian Air Force has spent developed in a combination with the Boeing company here in Australia, what's called the Loyal Wingman, which is a small jet-powered fast jet prototype, which is powered by artificial intelligence. So the Loyal Wingman is meant to accompany a crewed aircraft and fly alongside it with it, and pass on information that the Loyal Wingman finds, and if need be, help out that manned aircraft. Hence that term, the Loyal Wingman, that you have an assistant, if you like, who is flying alongside you. So that's a technology that is flying right now, and there's been about a dozen of those built now. In addition, our army has been experimenting with obsolete mechanized vehicles, obsolete armored personnel carriers, and been fitting those with large caliber guns, and driving them around simulated battlefields, acting as a swarm of armored vehicles by themselves. To a certain degree, they also have a fair bit of human input, but nonetheless, as vehicles, they are sensing and thinking and driving themselves across quite complicated obstacle courses. And then lastly, and a more sort of prosaic use, if you like, so Australia has a lot of ocean mass around it, and we're always concerned about illegal fishing and about refugees turning up on the borders and about smugglers. So our Department of Homeland Affairs and the customs people are now using a small robot sailboats in the northern seas, in the Timor Sea, north of Australia there. And the robot is, if you like, literally patrolling the beat, looking out for things which are interesting. And when the robot finds something interesting, it then calls up Canberra using wireless, effectively using the connectivity the same as the internet, and informs humans there that the robot's found something. Now that robot's about 2,000 miles away from Canberra, so you can see that those robots doing, if you like, a pretty dull task, just cruising across the ocean for literally days on end, at times weeks on end, and finding nothing. But as soon as it finds something, then having a look, ascertaining whether that something is something worthwhile reporting, and then sending a message back to Canberra that a human should now intervene, have a look at the image, and just confirm what the robot's seeing.
This is a fascinating topic, and at times a little frightening too, given we're never sure what's going to happen, but we're going to find out in a minute. Well, you're watching Global Connections Television, which is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guest. We would invite you to go to our website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous programs. Also, if you're involved with the PBS or Community Access Television Station, or perhaps an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup, or you have a podcast, or you just have a computer, you like our shows and you would like to share them, please feel free to do so. Global Connections Television is provided at no cost as a public service to help us better understand international issues and how they impact our lives. Today, we're taking a look at the possibility of robots and robots in warfare. And my guest today is an expert on this topic. Dr. Peter Layton is a visiting fellow at the Griffiths Asia Institute. He is the author of the book Grand Strategy and co-author of Warfare in the Robotic Age. Dr. Layton, this, as I mentioned, this is a fascinating area. You mentioned there were some prototypes out there doing things. What is just a ballpark price range? How much does it cost to make one of these robots? and from the cheapest to the most expensive, and maybe maintain it too. You have to maintain it, I guess. I don't know if you can make it one time and put it up for service and that's it, but just what kind of a price range are we talking about?
Now, that's the interesting thing, and there's definitely a couple of schools of thoughts here, or the sort of two ends of the spectrum. Over the last or about 10 or 15 years ago, robots first started appearing, and I suppose initially robots were seen as replacing humans, and so as we said before, military forces have a few very expensive platforms, whether they're tanks, aircraft, or large ships. So to a certain extent, some of the initial robots tended to be, if you like, replicate that small, few large and costly approach. So if you think about, there's a particular unmanned aerial vehicle called Global Hawk, and the US Navy has a version of it called the Triton. Now you're talking about a robot that costs about $100 million, which is just an extremely large sum of money, especially for a robot that perhaps may one day have a problem and crash, and you might lose that. Now it's an extremely capable robot that flies at 50, 60,000 feet and collects vast amounts of data for literally days on end. But it's a very expensive way about doing business. And that loyal wingman that I spoke about, as in are you accompanying manned aircraft into combat, at the moment, that's relatively expensive as well, at about $50, $60 million each, when you amortize the cost of the research and development across the fleet. At the other extreme, we have the robots, if you like, which are based from commercial sources and are really hobbyist things, just like those quadcopters that we see people flying around parks, that are drones that people buy from their electronic store for just a few $1,000 or so. Now they're very low cost. They only do one or two functions, and they don't do it that well. But you can have very large numbers of them. So the technology, as we know from our smartphones, the technology is getting where phones can do a lot more, and they're getting cheaper over time. So technology is favoring that, if you like, having the smaller and lower cost drones that can do more and more, rather than the large multi-purpose drones that cost hundreds of millions of dollars. In the Ukraine in particular, you're seeing, apparently over the front lines, you're seeing at times hundreds of drones airborne, and they have to be those cheap commercial hobbyist drones. So the military are being driven, if you like, by the commercial sector, which and the commercial sector, of course, is informed by building things for consumers, and so wants to make things low cost. So the military is being forced away from those highly expensive, highly capable drones towards low cost, less capable drones, but many more of them. Now, I just mentioned about the loyal wingman there. So the plan is to get that the cost of that down to about $10 million per unit item. Because in the Loyal Wingman case and the Global Hawk and the Triton, et cetera, you want to use the robot time after time again. So you're building a robot that will last, if you like, 10, 15, 20 years. In the hobbyist case there, especially in the Ukraine sort of during war, those low-cost, cheap commercial drones, they might only last one or two days at most. So they're expendable, if you like. They're sort of one-way systems, whereas the more complicated ones, you're hoping that they will be with you for a long, long time. There's that tension there, if you like, between sort of costs, the expensive, and the low cost. But once you start talking about robots that cost $100 million, you can't afford very many of them. So I'm not too sure that has a future, really.
It would be a hard sell for the taxpayers, that's for sure. There's no doubt about that. Well, the whole situation, we got military leaders, I think the most intelligent, the brightest, the best intentioned are ones who say we should never go to war. That should be the last place we go with any armies or anything. You've got other military leaders and politicians who say, well, we can start a war and no big deal. We'll just get into it, get out of it easily, which never happens easily. You don't get out of a war. But are robots likely to make wars more likely in the future? Will some of these military leaders and politicians say, I'm not going to worry about losing humans on the field. We'll just use robots.
Yes, we certainly talk about that in the book a bit. An interesting question here, of course, is that the technology of war has been constantly changing, and unfortunately, none of those technologies has seems to have made war less likely. We seem to be making war just as much now as we always have. So the worry about robots is that they will reduce the barriers associated with going to war, because suddenly with robots, war will be seen to be, if you like, low cost and affordable, and in particular, not cost lives. So from a domestic politics viewpoint, leaders will be more inclined towards starting a war because there's few costs involved for them at the ballot box. And to a certain extent, drone warfare in the Middle East may be an indicator of that. You can wage a war remotely, and there's no need to ascend in ground troops. But you've got to wonder, of course, as we said right at the start, that everyone's getting robots, that both sides of a conflict in the future will have robots. So will we end up where wars are basically one robot force fighting another robot force? Again, to a certain extent, when we talk about the Ukraine and the drone warfare at the moment, you certainly do have, you know, hundreds of drones on to both sides and each day grappling with each other. At the end of the day, though, of course, you have humans involved, even if they're fewer humans than ever before. And once you start getting humans involved, then there are certainly very large costs there. Costs as far as blood and treasure goes. So at the moment, robots don't look like making war more likely or less likely. And unfortunately, it seems about the same. But what is it? What is happening, which is interesting, is that in military affairs, we talk about the offense-defense balance, which is predominating now. Is it offensive military forces or defensive military forces? And the rise of robots and the experience of wars over the last 5 years has been that it is defensive forces which are now taking the lead. So robots may mean that leaders are less inclined to go offensive because the robot forces defending countries are much more effective. So that business about the defensive forces being sort of better might be a positive sign for the future.
It certainly may. Well, in the last 1 minute that we have left, let me ask you, what happens if a killer robot takes on artificial intelligence or AI or something? How do we deal with that? Is there some way simply it can be dealt with, or will the robot overthrow the human that created the robot?
Well, of course, robots, when you think about thinking stuff, you know, it's fine about the thoughts as far as that goes. None of the robots we have at the present time have that level of sophistication. And robots, of course, are just the same as, say, our cars or our ships or our planes. They have a certain amount of fuel in them, and after a fairly short time, they will run out. So there's no chance about robots as far as going on forever and ever and ever. This is not a Terminator series here. Now, in the book, I have to admit that we're fairly impartial about robots. We're talking about what warfare in the future might be like with robots. Now, whether we like it or not, militaries around the world will be using robots, and especially for wars of the survival, that is, when the nation is really threatened, people will use robots to the fullest extent that they possibly can. So robots will definitely be becoming a lot more automated and a lot more looking after themselves, if you like. But at the same time, our robots and our robot thinking, they're not terribly bright. And so they are pretty much sort of single purpose things. And as far as making war, they'll be fine when they're directed by human beings, but independently, not as capable of thought or of thinking or responding or acting. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. You're absolutely right. Well, Dr. Peter Layton, it's a fascinating topic, and it's one that we're going to be dealing with more and more as we move forward. But I want to thank you so very much for a very informative and interesting program today.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Thank you. My pleasure. I'm Bill Miller. Thank you for joining us today on Global Connections Television.